tell me a little bit about the whistleblower group you're working with as of now.
Okay. So the National Whistleblower Center is based in Washington, D.C. They've had a long track record, many decades of advocating for whistleblower protections, primarily through lobbying to Congress. Very well-established relationship with their founders, the Cohen brothers, that have a law firm that protects whistleblowers, focuses on that litigation. So they're very well-established, constantly have testimony in front of Congress trying to advise on different legal remedies to the whistleblowing situation. So I've had them on my radar for quite a while. Been studying whistleblowing systems on the system side, cybersecurity, anonymity-related whistleblowing topic. So I've had them as a potential partner for a while, wanted to get some stuff in the pipeline first, and then ultimately reached out to them early summer and ended up visiting with them over the summer a couple times, and we started working out how we could help each other. So that's where it's started, and the next step is to start reaching out further than my existing working group and try to reach into other disciplines. Unfortunately, a lot of the whistleblowing research up to this point is very siloed. So management has a long history of conducting whistleblowing research, kind of focusing on the organizational culture and how to foster speaking up in the office and stuff like that, open door policies. But it, unfortunately didn't have the systems side of it. So you might, come to the conclusion that, okay, we want to make it very easy for people to raise awareness to wrongdoing, so we'll create this website that people can go to report things. Well, if you've done anything on, website development or analytics or, trying to track your visitors to your website, there's a lot of things, and especially if you start looking at IP addresses and if they report from within the organization, they're using their employer-owned machine. So it doesn't take a whole lot to destroy any semblance of anonymity that that whistleblower might have thought they had when you go through a system that wasn't really well-designed to protect the anonymity in the first place. It doesn't mean that every organization is necessarily going to that length to try to find out who everybody is every time something gets reported, but the possibility of it is enough for me to say this is not acceptable, and that's where we're trying to change that.
So where do you come in? I know you come from the cybersecurity angle.
Sure.
Here. So if, say, I'm aware of some kind of wrongdoing and I want to report it to whoever it might be, an inspector general, HR person, whoever the appropriate person is to report something,
sure,
maybe not in the direct management chain per se, but the appropriate person in the organization. So, and I want to do this digitally, so obviously just opening my work email account and sending an email might not be the best way to do it. So what's where do you come on that? I mean,
well, in cybersecurity we have something called threat modeling. So everybody's situation is different. If you're working for a small mom-and-pop office that has 10 employees, your likelihood of ever being anonymous is very slim because you are too connected to everything that goes on in that business, right? If you're in an organization with 10,000 employees, at least the total size of what we call the anonymity set is much larger. However, if you focus on the actual issue that you're reporting, it doesn't even have to be the system that violates your anonymity. If you, even in an organization of 10,000 people, if you are only one of five people that was involved in a particular situation, once you've reported anything about that issue, they know immediately to go look at those five people, right? So that's on the content anonymity side. So there's a lot more to anonymity than just the systems and, hiding your IP address and using a burner phone or something like that, right? There's a lot more to it. And it depends, from the threat modeling perspective, who are you up against, right? So from an NSA standpoint, so some of our more famous whistleblowers that get a lot of the news coverage, Edward Snowden and others, Thomas Drake, going back to the original, right after 9/11, Russ Tice, those guys have a lot harder time ever separating themselves from the actual issues that they're reporting to actually achieve the real level of anonymity that they actually need, because they're up against the NSA. They have every tool at their disposal that you could ever dream of. So it's tough to actually give you a foolproof It's never really foolproof recipe of here's how to blow the whistle anonymously, because you don't know what you're up against. You might, especially if you're not in the technology side of things, you're just an innocent bystander that witnesses something and you feel compelled to blow the whistle. You can't anticipate what you're up against. So how do you navigate that appropriately is an unanswerable question at this point. What I'm trying to do is to get everybody to understand that problem and offer suggestions that have been tried and tested in a research environment that can actually say, hey, we can run tests against this to see if it exposes certain anonymity issues, or in this certain situation, we actually advise you to not follow this path and to go this path because of, you know, you could put in kind of an algorithm essentially to say, all right, how many people know about what happened? You know, type in some of those little key metrics and find out what's the likelihood of you being identified just based on the situation that you observed. There's a lot more that we can do on this side of things versus just passing a simple law that, you know, is called a whistleblower law and it has holes in it or it doesn't get executed properly once a certain agency starts trying to figure out how to implement it, right? There's too much ambiguity in it and it's not really based on real experimental research that says, okay, here's how to navigate this properly. Right now, we're kind of that, you know, there's that much unknown, and that's what I'm trying to hopefully solve with the working group, trying to bring people from multiple disciplines, management, ethics, accounting, you know, all the technology sides, engineering, you know, there's a lot of avenues that we can go to try to tackle this problem from all the different angles and not do it in a siloed fashion that we kind of have been for the last 30, 40 years.
So the research you want to do is going to pull all these diverse groups together that all look at it from a different angle. You're looking at it from security, but I might look at it from an ethical perspective or a legal perspective or somewhere else.
Absolutely.
So you want to create kind of a comprehensive kind of method for somebody from the whistleblower's perspective, not necessarily from management's perspective.
Yeah, we're trying to look at it from all angles, make sure that we're not missing something. So it happens in academia. We do our research, we stay in our lane, and we just kind of churn and keep going. But it doesn't allow us to really bridge those different silos if we're not actually talking and going to conferences that actually bring us together. If we stay in our discipline conferences, all we talk to are the same people that we work with, right? So we've got to find some way to bring us all together, you know, share ideas, say, hey, you know, that's a great idea, but here's something that would cause problems for me on this side. So how do we navigate that, right? Versus us choosing something that seems like it'll work, but it causes unintended consequences somewhere else. But yeah, we're with all of the technology that's advancing, the rapid adoption of certain technologies, you talk about like facial recognition and the surveillance state kind of approach, you know, trying to even hide by getting rid of all your devices, buying burner phones, you know, with cash and going to a Starbucks 20, you know, cities away and all that. Well, you know, did you take an Uber there? You know, did you walk that far? Did you take your, well, even if you did, you got caught on surveillance cameras. So if somebody has the capability to actually go look at the entire action leading up to reporting, they could probably figure out who you are. That's where we are right now. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody's up against that level of sophistication, but until we really get it sorted out, there's no real way to guide you properly. It's very, very scary for anybody that actually wants to blow the whistle. And, you know, we see it happen all the time with, you know, people that just had the right mindset, right intention, good-natured, hey, I just wanted to stop something from happening, and their life is ruined. They can't get hired. You know, their career is basically over. They have to file for bankruptcy. Like, all of the negative consequences that are really shooting the messenger. It had nothing to do with anything they did to cause problems for anybody other than the ones that wanted to hide the wrongdoing in the first place. And we can't allow that to continue.
So I did want to get your perspective on probably the biggest whistleblower case happening right now. You knew the question was going to come.
Sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, from where you sit, I mean, can you just give me kind of your take or your overview on what's happening nationally right now?
So, here's my answer that might classify as a non-answer. It's been politicized, and it's actually undermining the process of whistleblowing. It never should have made it public in any way, shape, or form until the investigation had actually run its course. So in the process of analyzing a whistleblower complaint, the initial complaint has to be viewed as, you know, assessed just on its face, is it credible or not? It doesn't actually measure fact or anything like that. It doesn't say this actually happened or this person is definitely guilty of anything. It just says, okay, is this worth us going further and investigating? Once that happens, there's a lot that's going on behind the scenes for good reason to investigate what really happened. But at the same time, and this is, you know, across any case of whistleblowing, the person that's being accused should always be protected in the process. With the way that this got out of the bag, you actually raise the threats to the potential whistleblower because now the person that has been, you know, accused of doing something is concerned about their reputation, right? They're having to figure out how to put this fire out that may or may not be true. Nobody knows yet. It's still an ongoing investigation. But now the politics has muddied the water that nobody can actually figure out what's real or not. If this had been done entirely behind the scenes by the proper investigation teams to run it, you know, all the way through its course, and then an actual report that wasn't tainted by politics had been released and it said, here's the facts, then we would have a much better gauge of what actually happened. But this process that we're seeing right now actually hurts the whistleblower because now they are a known quantity. We don't know their identity, but they exist. We know they exist. So now somebody's going to try to figure out who they are. Media is trying to figure out who they are. They're dissecting every little bit, like I told you, with content anonymity. They're saying, well, he works for this person or in this area and has experience with this, so let's narrow down the anonymity set. Eventually, that person's going to be found out. He's not anonymous. He or she is not anonymous, period, because they testified in front of a committee. So the other problem, and I didn't address this early, is that we have a problem with defining anonymity. We call things anonymous when they're really confidential. So then you get a whistleblower that goes to a process and says, I want to be anonymous. That's in their mind, right? But really the system or the process that they're going through only ever can promise confidentiality. The person that you're communicating with will know your identity, and they're promising to not disclose it to somebody else. But you never had anonymity. We try to say, or the, you know, way it's framed is that because the person that you shared it with that knows your identity didn't share your identity further, you're anonymous. No, you're not, because that one person knows you. To truly be anonymous, no one can actually know who the whistleblower is. So there is no anonymity right now for this current person because they've had to be called into question and interviewed. So you got to get the terms right to even get this fleshed out properly. Once that person's in front of other people, it's out of the bag, right? You can't control who leaks that person's identity later. How would you ever be able to really point to that person and say, this is definitely where it came from? Because you've jeopardized the anonymity from the outset. Once they're known by anybody, you can't really put it back in the bag. The anonymity's compromised.
So would the hope be that, and you said that, of course, anonymity can never be completely guaranteed. There's always a chance somebody's going to find out who the whistleblower is in any kind of situation. So would the hope be that, though, increasing anonymity and creating kind of a more concrete path for somebody to feel a little more secure in doing this, that is the ultimate goal increasing transparency in organizations and governments and just in the hope that transparency will help things work better, essentially?
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal, absolutely. Right now, though, based on older laws and efforts that have been taking place and based on, you know, early research on whistleblowing, we even have current processes that are kind of, you know, gold standard ways of doing things that are absolutely terrible for preserving your anonymity. There are whistleblowing reporting systems out there that you can use as an organization. You can pay them to use their approach. And it has a 150 question questionnaire for you to answer about that issue. Well, content anonymity is absolutely out of the question once you start answering all those questions, right? If that's shared with the organization, they can ultimately whittle down who that person was, even if they didn't know anything else, right? Just based on the content. So we can't be kind of creating what we call in cybersecurity a honeypot. We can't be attracting people to do the right thing, but it's actually almost a trap that sets them up to, you know, fail and ultimately be jeopardized and retaliated against. There's a lot of stuff that's just currently being done right now that's not as effective as it proclaims to be, and you only really find out that it wasn't when you go through it yourself. You trusted the system. You trusted the process. You followed the policy. And somehow somebody figured out who you were. As somebody that doesn't use technology, you know, and investigate it, you're not going to have any awareness of how that broke down. Even trying to argue it in court, it's going to take you a lot of time and money, resources, and mental anguish just trying to fight, you know, hey, somebody figured out who I was and they weren't supposed to. Well, how can you actually prove it? So everything is weighted on the organization side to defend against retaliation because it's very hard to actually prove what went wrong, especially when they're relying on certain laws and certain, you know, gold standards of ways of doing things that aren't, you know, really doing what they say they are.
Is there anything else you'd like to add or you'd like people to know about what you're doing?
I would say that anybody that wants to learn a little bit more about an actual case could come to Cybersecurity Day on October 23rd. That's in the afternoon, 1 to 5. Brittany Kaiser, if you've watched The Great Hack on Netflix, she's one of the primary focuses of that documentary. She's going to actually be responding to questions that we had students submit to her, and we'll be playing her responses to that. So if you're coming, definitely watch The Great Hack ahead of time so you're at least familiar with her situation with Cambridge Analytica, and then you'll get to hear from her as the third speaker for Cybersecurity Day.
Will that be at this building or somewhere?
That's in Westlake 116.
Yep. Westlake 116.
Yep.
October 23rd, 1 to 5. Got it.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for
your
time.
Yeah, sure.
I really appreciate
no problem.
It.